Well, we're going to talk about a crisis that I started thinking about and read a really good book recently about, so I thought I'd share a lot of these thoughts with you. I thought it was very pertinent to our time, and it's called The Crisis, at least I've called it The Crisis of Safety. And here's the book that we're looking at, but first I want you to turn your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 10. So turn there, Proverbs chapter 10, and then I just wanted to give credit to a lot of the ideas that we're going to talk about from this book that I read recently. Proverbs chapter 10, I thought about this verse quite a bit as well, because we live in a culture and a generation, a day, where everybody's worried about safety. And I'm not talking about to the extent of, you know, coming into school shootings, and I'm not talking about that kind of safety. I'm talking about the definition that we're going to see here today, based on an idea called concept creep. I know that sounds kind of weird, but we'll talk about that as well. Safety is not just physical, but everybody deserves to be safe emotionally. You heard a lot in the last couple of years about the snowflakes and the safe spaces and all those things, and really redefining some things that has caused some issues. We'll talk about this in a minute. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 9. And excuse my voice this morning. It's been kind of down there at Gators. The smoke will get your voice a little weary, so I'm sorry about that. So just bear with me. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 9. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely. That word means securely. He that walketh uprightly, or justly, righteously, does what's right, walketh securely. But he that perverteth, or does wrong, follows evil, perverteth his ways, shall be known. The idea there is, if you really want security and safety, then do what's right. Simply do what's right. Follow the Lord. And people are worried about this emotional security, emotional safety, and yet they're living in a perverted way. They're perverting traditional things. They're perverting the way that things have been done historically, or the way things have been defined historically, whether it be, you know, gender or whatever issues that they're redefining today. If you are not being upright with those things, then obviously you're not going to have the security that the Scripture speaks of. So I began to read this book. It's actually called, I don't know if you can see it, The Coddling of the American Mind. That sounds like a pretty strong title. Basically saying that Americans are a bunch of babies, and to put it mildly. They've been coddled. The past generation that we're going to look at in a minute, called the I generation, since 1995, has basically grown up in an environment and atmosphere where they have to be coddled. Everything has to be safe. You got the helicopter moms and all those kind of things that you hear about. And it's really created a lot of problems. Now, these two guys here, Lukianoff and Haidt are their names. Lukianoff is a First Amendment specialist. He's the founder of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. Haidt is a social psychologist, university professor. Both of these men are liberals. They're not Christians, so I don't want you to get the wrong idea. And I do want to preface, there are a few things in the book that are not appropriate. I do want to caution against that. But the truths and the principles that they laid out, it's basically a research study. So the things that they have gathered have been from data, from research, and from the problems that they've seen in the past on college campuses with, for example, a professor coming in that wants to, or a guest speaker that wants to come in, and he may be presented an alternate view. And that's just terrible. And I am physically, emotionally, torrentially, terribly abused because of this particular viewpoint that was given to me. And these men started seeing this happening in college campuses all across America. And they said, now, wait a minute. We're supposed to be a free country, and it's not right that only one side should be presented. We're supposed to be open-minded. You know, liberals teach to be tolerant and open-minded, and yet they aren't open-minded and tolerant when it comes to opinions that are against theirs. And so even though they're not extreme liberals, these men, but at least they saw that, and they're like, wait a minute now. We're supposed to be able to expose our young people and expose these college students to alternate viewpoints. They should be able to think through and use their minds and not be offended and hurt and scream and cry like a bunch of little babies and think, oh, I'm being abused for forever and this is a terrible thing. And these people that are doing that ought to be thrown into prison. Now, wait a minute. Did they take a gun and shoot you? Did they punch you in the face with their fist? Did they physically harm you? Did they break the law? No. They simply said something. Now, we're a bunch of sissies. We're a bunch of softies. Our minds have been coddled. Again, I don't agree with everything in this book. There are some things where they give, for example, they record real events that we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks. Real events that have happened in this country. Some of them I had no idea they had happened. And so in some of the real events, for example, they'll record some of the dialogue. There are some inappropriate language in there that we're obviously not going to cover. So I want to caution against that. But they record real events that happen in college campuses about why this country that we're living in, this generation, is basically been coddled. Again, they don't agree with, I don't think these men are Christians, I don't know. But the principles that they share, it's kind of funny. The principles they share come from traditional, right thinking, biblical thinking. They probably don't even know that. They probably would never agree to that or acknowledge that. But it's interesting to say the least. These men began a research project back in 2014 because of their concern about censorship on college campuses. You know, oh, this person, this guest speaker can come in if they're going to be talking about, you know, gay rights, or they're going to be talking about freedoms of all these liberal ideas. They're more than welcome to come in. But if someone's going to come in and propose an alternate viewpoint, then everybody's up in arms and upset and crying, and we can't have this. Students were the ones not supporting free speech. And these men are like, no, wait, we're supposed to support free speech in this country. And these students that cry out, we want free speech, and yet they don't allow free speech when the viewpoint is against theirs. Or they support free speech with a very limited viewpoint, for example. And students were now using what's called the heckler's veto. The heckler's veto. And removing this word is a big word. Triggering. I can't stand that word. I tell you, it makes my blood curdle. We're just a bunch of babies. I was triggered. Well, a trigger is a gun. You know, if you want to get triggered, go out to a gun range with an AR-15 and start pulling the trigger a bunch. You'll feel great. You know, but I mean, I was triggered because they said something which made me feel so terrible. And I want my mommy to come and I need a new diaper. I mean, get over it. It's amazing. But this is the generation that has been raised in this country over the past 20 years. And it's scary. And here's why it's scary. Because in another 10 to 15 years, they're going to be the ones in leadership in this country. And that's scary. And these men are trying to sound the alarm. Again, they're not Christians. They're not Christians. They're liberal professors. They're not extreme liberals. They're more of moderate liberals. But they're trying to sound the alarm of, we've got to stop this baby stuff in our country and minds that have been coddled. So they'll use the heckler's veto. Here comes the person on the campus that's going to present an alternate viewpoint. And they're going to have a debate, you know, because we're in college and we're supposed to be using our brains to think and think through alternating opinions. There's nothing wrong with that. God made our minds to think. God doesn't want us to be like sheep. Just pour things in. Even the Bereans, as we've mentioned many times, went and they searched the scriptures and verified that Paul knew what he was talking about. We've got to be thinkers. And if somebody brings an alternate viewpoint, we got to be able to dissect it, analyze it, and compare it to God's Word, and find out if it's right or wrong. Oh, but we're going to heckle this person. We're going to read some stories over the next couple of weeks. It'll shock you what college students have done to these people. And really, to me, it was sad as I read those things, and I thought, where's leadership? Where's law? Where's order? It's gone. Because we cower to the baby generation. People call them the I generation. I call them the baby generation. The safe space generation. The snowflakes. And they cower to them. Oh, we didn't really mean that. And I mean, the things that these professors said, or that these alternate viewpoint debate people were going to say, were literally minimal little things. Nothing. But somebody got offended. And so then we use social media to go out there and build a huge following. And we destroy that person. And we can heckle them and protest them enough to veto them out of coming to present. And we win. Ha ha. We didn't have to be offended anymore. I am now safe again. And we've coddled the mind. We've coddled it one more time. These are the things we're going to talk about. And there's a premise out there by these professors, by these college presidents, by many in America, by parents even, that students are fragile. That we're going to talk about this quite a bit. It's one of the main three great untruths that these men are going to present. Untruths that are being forced down the throats or being promoted by parents, by teachers, by other people in our country for the past 20 years. They're untruths. And there's a premise at the very beginning that students are fragile. They're going to break. Now, I mean, I don't know. When I was a boy, and I loved being a boy when I was a kid. We lived in the country. My dad had five kids, and so I had an older brother, and I had a younger brother, older sister and younger sister. I was right in the middle. And us three brothers, we'd wake up in the morning, summer, we couldn't wait for the summertime. We'd wake up in the morning, we'd hop on our bikes, we'd ride, just go. We had no idea where we were going, we were just riding, running through the woods and all that, and somehow instinctively, we always knew it's lunchtime. Not one of us had a watch. We didn't have anything. Somehow we managed to make our way back home just in time for lunch. Mom have sandwiches or chips or pizza or whatever, and we'd eat lunch. And then guess what? We got right back on our bikes or ran out in the woods and played in the fields all day long. So a car might have rode by and brushed against us, and we might have fallen off our bicycles. It would have been horrible. We might have gotten lost. We might have seen a snake. Of course, one time we did. We were far away from the house, saw a snake. I don't even know what kind of snake it was. It don't matter. Snakes and I are not friends. And I just ran. I turned and I ran top speed, which isn't very top for me. And I ran top speed until I got to my mom's house. And I'm never going back in those woods again. There was a snake there. But, you know, that snake might have bitten me. Or, now get this, we had the world's best jungle gym. We bought our property, my dad did, of course he got a winner, better than anything Kevin Gower could get, built in the 1930s, falling apart dump basically, and he remodeled it and fixed it up, and my mom was angry about that a little bit, but got it going, they're still living there today, but in the back there, a brick mason had owned the house, and he did a ton of work, he had a huge business. We had this huge warehouse in the back that was made out of like 1x4s, I'm talking curved. It was the most unsafe, dangerous. I looked back on that and thought, we were in there climbing all. It was dilapidated. It was a rusty nail sticking out. The roof was all falling in, and we're in there climbing around like a bunch of monkeys. Thought it was the greatest thing in the world. We had gotten in the back there, rolled around and all this equipment and stuff. We dug a bunker, so we could play war. You know, another thing too. You know what? Kids need to watch war movies. Sorry, they need to watch cowboys and Indians. Man, we watched Combat. We watched almost every episode of Combat. I loved Combat. I wish they still showed that. And we learned a lot about World War II just by watching Combat. But anyway, we wanted a bunker like Combat. So we went out there and dug a 5-foot-deep bunker. It was 5 feet deep. It was 5 feet wide this way and 3 feet this way. We even put a roof on it. We'd hide down there. And sometimes the guy that owned that property with the Masons, he let us play back there. But his Mexicans would come and get equipment. We'd be hiding under the bunker with our guns, you know, ready to go. But you know something terrible happened? My brother and I were digging the bunker. We exerted so much energy and straining ourselves, we got hernias. We had to go to the hospital and have surgery. My mean old parents let me go back there and get a hernia. It devastated me for life. I've never recovered. And I'm mad at my parents because of that. That's what the current generation would say. Actually, the current generation wouldn't even know what a shovel is, to be honest with you. I hate to say it. But we went out there and had fun. We rolled around. If OSHA or somebody had come by and seen us climbing up in them 1x4 rafters on that tent, they would have had a heart attack. You're going to get hurt. Come down. No, it's like I told my wife, we can't let our boys ride around the neighborhood. You know why? Somebody will come by and see them and call the police. And they'll come to my house and arrest me for child neglect. Now, isn't that sad? It's terrible. Why? Because we've coddled the mind. They've coddled it for over 20, 25 years, and now we're reaping the benefits with a soft generation that has no leadership ability, that has no World War II generation. It was the greatest generation. If we had a war like that, and say, all right, guys, we're going to go to this beach and we're going to storm it. Yeah, but when the gate falls, people are going to die. Well, yeah, it's for freedom. Boy, we'd run the other way like, I don't know what they would do today. All right, I want to talk about this iGen. You can see it on your notes if you want. It's those born in 1995 and later. It's because they're the ones that grew up with the I being Internet. Now, I was born in 1980, so I was kind of in the middle there, and it took me a while to figure out the Internet. I remember when the Internet came out. I remember when my dad bought our first computer in 1995. Man, Windows 3.11. Man, we were big stuff. And, you know, you could get Netscape. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Netscape and AOL and Juno. Man, I'm telling you, it was a click on that button and yeah, y'all remember that? Yeah. Finally, you know, I remember when my wife and I got married, we had a computer and we had to get on the internet and stuff. And we had some Walmart.com internet service, man. It was 10 bucks a month. And I'd say, well, Megan, I'm going to get on the internet. It was an event. I'm going to get on the internet. I'm going to go in there. I clicked the button. Well, I'm going to go make supper, take a shower, drink some coffee. All right. The sound's all done. All right, there's the internet. Let me click on that page and wait another 5 minutes. But I remember all that. I remember when it came out and things. Our kids today, since 1995, have grown up with the internet. They've grown up with, and even more recently, since the advent of social media in 2007, which that's another one of the little mini crises we're going to talk about later on this summer. I did a research, a pretty lengthy research literature review on social media back a couple years ago. Really kind of an interesting and phenomenal way that that all came about and how it rose so quickly to prominence. Because what did, by the way, just real quick, what did social media do versus the internet? In the internet, it's one-sided. Okay? I'm on the internet and I'm looking for things, or I'm researching things. I'm doing it. But with social media, it's now two-sided. I'm interacting with other people in that world and they're responding. And it really revolutionized how people use the internet, social media and all that. I mean, these kids today, they don't need cell phone service. Y'all do understand that, right? They don't want it. If they have anything that can get on the internet, they can use Snapchat Messenger, Instagram Messenger. They can even make phone calls and face calls. They don't need plans. They don't need the traditional, here's my flip phone. Call somebody on the phone. They don't do that. They don't do that. And, you know, things like Snapchat that erase the message once somebody reads it, unless you screenshot it and then it, or save it, and then it tells the person that they screenshotted it or saved it, so then you can be worried about it. And but actually, all that stuff is saved on a server. People just, yeah, they can still access it. The kids just think, oh, it went away. It magically vanished into thin air, into the ether. Okay. Good for you. When the police find it, you'll be in trouble. Anyway, social media really changed all this. This is the I generation. They grew up with the internet, and they are a generation that is obsessed with safety. And we're talking about not physical safety, even though you hear a lot about that today, but they're more obsessed with emotional safety. And this is what we're going to really hone in on. How did that definition change from safety to emotional safety? And here's really what we're talking about. Safety from those who disagree with you. Now, you would think in a generation that has all this social media and has all these things that they would be able to interact with people and have, you know, a backbone to be able to express their own opinions, to know why they believe what they believe, and to be able to accept alternate positions, say, well, we disagree, and that doesn't mean I hate you and I'm going to go shoot you or something, or that I need emotional safety because that person disagrees with me. Well, get over it. That's life. A lot of people are going to disagree with you. But we've trained a generation that really cannot think anymore. But these safe spaces and what they call trigger warning, started appearing in college campuses and all these things. And here's what this generation, again, as I said, here's what this generation has grown up with. The premise that they are fragile. Now, let me say something right here. I don't believe it's the fault of the young people. It's not the fault of this generation that's in college. It's not. It's the fault of the parents. The fault of the people that raised them. Let's be honest with you. And like I said, we were out there playing in that jungle gym of 1x4s that was dilapidated. My brother Daniel, I don't know what it was about him and my younger brother. He was like, if I'm going to get hurt, I'm going to go all out. I'm going to have a head injury. That boy, I'm surprised he probably had 45 concussions by the time he was 8 and didn't even know it. He was inevitably running into the house, Mom, I got hurt, and blood just gushing, you know. And I'm like, what happened? Mom's like, you're all right. Clean him up a little bit. Thanks, Mom. And he'd run right back out. And I'm like, you just fell about 10 feet, landed on who knows what, busted your head open, and didn't even, who needs stitches? The stitches, you know, we don't need that. And he'll go right back out there and play. I mean, and I've tried not to coddle my kids too. You know what? You're going to get hurt. My brother Daniel busted his head open 40 times. He's fine. Now, obviously, we don't want to go to extremes, you know. Dad, my arm is dangling at a 90-degree angle. Well, let me pop that in for you, son. No, you know, obviously, well, we need to go to the doctor here and get that fixed. I'm not saying to go to that extreme, but it's just every little thing. And especially what we're going to talk about is not the physical things, but it's the emotional things. Oh, disagreed with me. Oh, it's terrible. The emotional safety generation. It's a generation that is coddled or overprotected. Again, I'm not against safety, but we've overprotected. We're going to talk, for example, even about, ready? Peanut allergies. Now, some people might get mad. People might get mad, but there's a reason for it. You know, it's ridiculous. Eva has to fill out, you know, here's a list of 45 things if somebody's allergic to. Why? You know why? And I will talk about the research that supports it. Again, these guys don't, they're not going to the Bible. They're talking about research. But of course, we don't want to think about research. It's real numbers. That supports the fact that when we push that on them from the time they're born, oh, you might be allergic to that peanut. Don't eat it. Well, the body has to build natural immune systems. Imagine that. And if we protect everybody from everything, man, throw them in there, give them some germs. I'm sorry. There's a balance, obviously. But we've sterilized them so much. Sterile, everything. Oh, you might get a peanut. Oh, don't even sniff the peanut. Don't even open the jar. And then again, that way when they grow up, we can spend thousands and thousands of dollars researching what their allergies are and getting them on this stuff that's going to cure them. And I know people have real allergies. I'm not knocking that. But we've promoted this culture of overprotectiveness even from a peanut. Now, I know people have legitimate peanut allergies. Don't take me wrong now. But they did a research study we're going to talk about later that showed that kids that were exposed to them from a young age withstood them and never had the allergies. That's interesting. But we've always got to have something to be a victim about, even if it's a peanut. We've got to be a victim. So it's a generation that's coddled and overprotected. This iGen grew up with the internet, with social media. There's a man named Twinge in 2017. He wrote a research article called iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids, they're super connected, are growing up less rebellious. In other words, they're just whatever. More tolerant, but less happy and completely unprepared for adulthood and what it means for the rest of us. We're going to look into the reasons why anxiety and depression and suicide. Now, you think about it. When we talk about social media, I got to wait. Oh, look at all of my followers that are liking this. And my life is wrapped up around what people think and follow about me on my dumb little iPhone. And oh, they disagreed with me. Oh, and so since I'm living in my room by myself and don't interact with people, and I've been coddled, I can't handle that someone disagreed with me emotionally. I'm going to commit suicide. There's no way out. You think I'm crazy? It's happening in this country. This social media has ramped up. The statistics we're going to look at prove it. Have ramped up suicide, depression, anxiety, all this mental health issues. And so the mental health people are happy because they're doing more medicine, and the pharmaceutical companies are happy, and money, money, money everywhere. This is a generation that we're raised up in. Here is a little contrast here. The iGen belief versus traditional alternatives. iGen says, eliminate or avoid anything that feels unsafe. Now, I'm not talking about, oh, the oven is hot, I won't touch it, it's not safe. They're talking about that viewpoint. It hurts me. I can't survive that. I have to find something. I got to avoid that. And I got to be mean to that person and stay away from me. They disagree with me. Versus traditional alternative. Seek out challenges. Why? Because it'll make you stronger. You know, if I wanted to be like Johnny back over there, going to Planet Fitness every night, you know, what does Johnny do? He's challenging himself. He's finally got up to 10 pounds on the bench. He finally can lift the bar. You know, what do you do when you work out? I'm terrible at working out. I've tried it a few times. I gave up. I just got fatter. I said, this is ridiculous. I quit. But, you know, and my brother's over there, and I'm like, I said, whatever, man. Have fun. You guys that know how to do all that stuff, I'm proud of you. I'm a wimp, I guess. But, you know, what do you do? And then the Bible even talks about that in Hebrews, about having your senses spiritually exercised to discern good and evil. Now, what am I doing? I'm challenging my spiritual senses like a muscle so they get stronger. You know, and I know people are, you know, we often make fun of it, you know, and, you know, I'll make my kids do something like, oh man, Dad, that's really hard. Yes, son, it'll build character. You know, we like that one. I love that. I heard that a lot growing up. But you know what? There's a lot of truth to that. There really is. Because what's the alternative? This. You know, we learned a lot of character riding around on our bikes all over creation, not having a clue where we were going. We learned a lot of character climbing up in a tree and falling out and breaking something. We learned stuff. We learned how to do it a different way the next time. You know, I remember working for my dad. Sometimes my dad would just drop me off. All right, son, get to work. Well, Dad, I don't know what to do. You'll figure it out. Oh, okay. You know how I figured it out? By doing it the wrong way a couple times and getting yelled at. Oh, I got yelled at. My dad hurt me emotionally. I remember the first time my dad didn't trust me. I was a little kid. I was like 16 or 17. And so he didn't put a brush in my hand at all. You know, you can't just, people think, oh, painter, pick a brush up and start going. No, it's not like that. Anyway, he would have these big, massive houses. I told you, I'd have to sand them. Every square inch of wall, every square inch of ceiling with a pole sander. Up and down. Lots of fun for hours. Great stuff. And then one day, the men on the crew felt bad for me. They're like, hey, we're going to start teaching you how to paint. Now, my dad wasn't there. And so I remember Brian got me an oil, the hardest thing to start with, oil primer. It dries really fast. And he put me on another hard thing to start with, a metal door. If you mess up a metal door, it's over. So he said, all right, here, start with these panels and do it this way. And remember, keep the brush stroke smooth so it doesn't clog up on you. And I'd never painted before, but I was learning. And so I started going, and I was doing okay, but you could see a couple blobs. And my dad walked in. What are you doing on that door? He was so upset at me. He thought I was going to mess it up. And I finished it. It did have a few problems, but it looked kind of bad. And I put the brush down and went back to the sander. And my dad came back later and said, well, son, I'll show you how to do it next time. I shouldn't have got upset. But you know what? I learned how to do a door by being challenged. And that sounds like a silly example. We learn how to do things and we learn character by being challenged. But we don't want to be challenged today. We want to avoid anything that feels unsafe. Avoid it. Run away from it. But traditionally, seek out a challenge. Oh, that's hard to do. I'll get somebody else to do it. No, get in there and do it. You'll learn. You'll learn how to do things. I remember I used to work with my dad mowing grass at the houses he would paint. When they were all done, the builder would say, hey, we'll pay your son $15 to mow the lawn. I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. I was a 15, 16-year-old kid, $15. How'd you like them prices, Isaac? It'd be great. Well, the houses were on these slopes and hills, and so it's like, here's the house and here's the lawn. And I'm on the bottom with a push mower. Yeah. It was challenging, I want to tell you that. But I learned how to cut a grass. I learned that when you get to the top, it's a lot easier coming down. Yeah, anyway, learned a lot of things by being challenged. But we like to take the challenges out of the way of our young people, and we set them up for failure. They're not prepared for life. Always trust your feelings. That's the iGen. And I know this one sounds a little strange. Free yourself from cognitive distortions. Now that basically, that's a psychological thing. That was a traditional, again, they're not biblical. They're just saying, be able to clear your mind and think. Use the reasoning, the mind, the brain that God gave you. That's traditionally what you would say if you came across a problem, right? Well, let's think through it. Let's analyze it. How can we get through this problem? Oh no, just trust your feelings. That's the iGen. We're going to talk about this. Third one, assume the worst. Now, this may not make sense now. We're going to get to it in the next couple weeks. The us versus them mentality. That here we are, the coddled generation, and that there's another group out there that's out to get us. That speaker coming on the college campus and the president that invited her is out to get us. And it's us versus them. And we've got to build a following of us by using social media to get them versus the alternative of taking a generous view of others, give the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that president, we're going to look at one time a president just sent an email out and it was, I'm going to put it up on the board. You'll read it. You'll think, what's wrong with that? Well, somebody got offended. You know why? Because they didn't take a generous view of others. That person's being racist. Now, wait a minute. Do you know the intent of that person's heart? You don't. But it impacted me emotionally, so therefore you're a racist. I'm not kidding. This is literally what they're saying. We're going to look at it. You hurt me. Don't say that word. Take a generous view of others. What if that person just, you know what? I stumble on my words all the time. Ask my students. Deep, 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 deep. That's all, folks. That's me in the classroom sometimes. You know, you mess up your words, you get mixed up, you say the wrong thing. Be generous toward people. They may not have meant what you thought they meant. calm yourself down and just relax and give them the benefit of the doubt and logically discuss it. But we don't like that anymore. It's just, you hurt my feeling. It's us versus them. And you're trying to get me. And you're a bigot and a racist. This is what's happening in our country today. We got to move on quickly. Maybe I can get one more slide in here. This is what we're going to look at over the next few weeks. Three great untruths. Now, these three great untruths that these men gleaned from their research project, they're three things that are basically lies that are being told our young people. And these are the lies that they've grown up with. And we're going to look at each one of them. We're going to look at examples, actually, of them as well. It's the untruth of fragility. You know, we've always heard, what doesn't kill you makes you what? Stronger. Make you stronger. You said something mean to me. Did it kill you? No. Did those words actually pull out an AR-15 and shoot your arm and you had to go to the hospital? No. It'll make you stronger. But we teach and have been taught, this generation has been taught that what doesn't kill you, you better avoid it because it's going to make you weaker and it's going to hurt you. It's a lie. It's a lie. The untruth of emotional feelings, we've just alluded to this. It's the three great untruths. The untruth of emotional feelings. Always trust, truth. Great misspelling. That's what I get for making a slideshow during camp. Always truth or trust your feelings. This is the lie that this generation has grown up with. Again, if my feelings were hurt, then that person is a violent bigot that deserves to go to prison for the rest of his life. Now, I can go out and shoot somebody and murder them and I'll get 7 years and get out on parole. But buddy, you go against somebody's emotional feelings, you're done. Life's over. Look at Judge Kavanaugh. Boy, they were out to just vitriol against him. Why? And remember them ladies that got the protested that one senator, was it Snow or Flake? Yeah, Flake is flaky. And they got him in the elevator. What is that? It's the heckler's veto. We disagree with you and we're going to shame you and destroy you. You're the worst person on the planet. This is what we've grown up with. The untruth of us versus them. Again, this is what they've been taught. That life is a battle between good people and evil people. When we get to that section, we're going to talk about what they define as the good people, and what they define as the evil people. So just one real quick, if I can get to the next slide, I'm going to read a story to start out with from the book, and then we'll have to stop. There we go, peanut allergy. That's what I wanted to talk about. Listen to this. In August 2008, Max, age 3, had his first day of preschool in Virginia. Before he was allowed to take the first step on his 18-year-old journey to college, his parents, John and Jane, had to attend a mandatory orientation session where the rules and procedures were explained by Max's teacher. The most important rule, judging by the time spent discussing it, was no nuts. Now, we're not talking about Barney Fife's definition of nuts. Ernest T. Bass, he's a nut. Now, we're talking about the peanuts. Because of the risk to children with peanut allergies, there was an absolute prohibition on bringing anything containing nuts into the building. Of course, peanuts are legumes, not nuts, but some kids have allergies to tree nuts too. So along with peanuts and peanut butter, all nuts and nut products were banned. And to be extra safe, the school also banned anything produced in a factory that processes nuts. So many kinds of dried fruits and other snacks were prohibited too. As the list of prohibited substances grew and as the clock ticked on, John asked the assembled group of parents what he thought was a helpful question. Does anyone here have a child with any kind of nut allergy? If we know about the kid's actual allergies, he said, I'm sure we'll do everything we can to avoid risk. But if there's no kid in the class with such an allergy, then maybe we can lighten up a bit and instead of banning all those things, just ban peanuts. The teacher was visibly annoyed by John's question, and she moved rapidly to stop any parent from responding. Don't put anyone on the spot, she said. Don't make any parent feel uncomfortable. Regardless of whether anyone in the class is affected, these are the school's rules. Spending hours talking about a peanut allergy and banning them from the school. This is what we're going to talk about. The hygiene hypothesis. We'll get to it next time. Hygiene hypothesis. We've shielded them from everything, anything possibly that could hurt them. And what has it done? It's actually made them weaker. It's made them weaker. I'll close with this one quote, and then we'll come back to it next week. By shielding children from every possible risk, we may lead them to react with exaggerated fear to situations that aren't risky at all and isolate them from the adult skills that will one day have to matter. The hygiene hypothesis is thanks to hygiene, antibiotics, listen now, because of hygiene, antibiotics, and too little outdoor play. Children don't get exposed to microbes as they once did. And this may lead them to develop immune systems that overreact to substances that actually aren't threatening, causing allergies. This is where we are. Now, that came from actual research studies. This isn't made up. But we've got to go. Our time is up. We're going to pick up here next time. We're going to get into these three untruths, and I'm going to actually give you some examples of what has happened on college campuses. That safetyism is number one, and we're not talking about someone coming in with a gun, even though people are worried about that. They're talking about emotional safety, emotional. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you would just bless our study here as we look at these crises in our day and the problems, and Lord, really how we have failed as parents to follow your word. We haven't trained our children in the way they should go. We haven't followed the principles of the Bible, and it's resulted in a messy situation here in our country. And Lord, I pray you'd give us all wisdom as your people to do what is right and to follow you. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right, thank you.